Thomas Buckingham. Good morning and welcome. We've read your original submission. Thank you very much for putting that in. You don't need to reread that out to us. You're probably pleased to hear, but you're very welcome to speak to it, highlight key points, and then we'll see if we have questions for you.
Okay. I have to say I agree with a lot of what Ian Ruddick was just said.
Yeah.
And if I could get my phone looking like his, well, I'd be pretty happy too. So, a lot of my thing is with the cost of doing the conforming to what you want, what the plan says. And like I brought, well, current farm of mine I brought about 5 years ago, and it was had been a dairy runoff farm, and we had to spend a lot of time getting the creeks cleared out because cows had been in them and making a mess. And we were fortunate, because I live in the Waikawa Valley, the Waikawa River catchment, we're sort of exclusive because it all goes the other way, it doesn't come into the main river anyway. So we know the water quality in the Waikawa estuary is reasonably good, apart from a mud bank halfway down it that moves up and down depending on what the weather's doing. But the cost of cleaning out all those ditches to get the water table low enough to actually farm the farm is a big cost. So as far as fencing off the waterways go, we're quite happy to do them because they're quite big waterways, and sheep can get stuck in them now. But if the ones we have fenced off, the weeds and that grow in them, well, how do you clean them out? And then you get a big flood comes through, it washes down the sediment and everything else, carries on down to the neighbour's culverts or your own culverts, and then you've got problems with trying to clean that out or keep neighbouring relations going good.
Yeah.
We were fortunate in that Environment Southland were offering a 50% subsidy to fence off creeks in our catchment up to a couple of years ago, and we took advantage of quite a bit of that, and it certainly got a helped get the creeks fenced off. Whether or not we should have fenced the sheep out of them as well, or whether it would have been better, like just getting keeping cattle out of them, certainly you can notice the difference there. I'd have to say that the land sustainability team, I think it's a very good arm of Environment Southland, and I'd like to see it increased in size, because I have a good reputation or repertoire with them, and we'll have Nathan or Carl come out if I have a problem at all, and especially at the start of winter when I'm wondering, you know, is this going to be right if I winter the cattle here, and because of the extreme cold it can get, I sort of try to keep them in shelter if I can, and they just ask the question of him what's his idea of it, and we'll have a discussion about what it does. So I feel that that's a good arm of Environment Southland, to have them there on farm making the decisions for you. And I struggle with the need for consents. You know, we've driven around the farm and they know the area, and we've got wee gullies and bits and pieces. Because the farm hasn't been developed, we have gullies that need tiled in. It may only be 50 metres of thing, but it'll square up the paddock. It's in places will stop the sheep walking around the edge of the top of the gully, making tracks and let the grass grow over the whole thing. So you end up with it, you know, you stop and see them moving off there because you've got grass cover. But if I have to get a consent to do that every time I do it, well, it's a cost that I can't afford. You know, it's just an added cost, and it's not helping the situation achieving it. So, I think that's sort of yeah, I'd like to see Environment Southland looking after the environment, but it's not just the waterways, is it? It's making farming, because it's a major income earner for the Southland, making it so young people want to do it as well. So we've got to make sure that we're, whatever we're doing now is not making it that hard for anyone else to to want to be part of it. So yeah, it's probably something what I was going to say, I think.
Okay, that's good. And there's a lot of detail in the submission too, so thanks for that. Morris, questions?
Yeah, no, thanks very much. That's that is good, and it's very reassuring to hear what you say about the land sustainability team. And we've been out through your area. I'm not sure if we went exactly past your place, but we've all been around to have a look and got a pretty good understanding of what the issues are there. One thing I wanted to ask you about was the tiling or the filling in of little small creeks and that which you mentioned. Obviously, then that could be an issue if you are, you know, covering in streams that have got fish in them and that sort of thing. So what sort of streams do you think or watercourses are suitable for this practice? And where should there be a cut-off for a permitted activity versus having to get a resource consent for that sort of thing?
Well, I would think, given the economics of sheep farming, that nobody's going to do anything that's not really, you know, it's going to have to make a return for them before they're going to do it anyway. So yeah, there's, because of how far it's been developed, I don't think there's a lot of, you know, if it's a dirty big gully that's, like I've got some of them that, you know, probably 10, 15, 20 metres wide, look, you never, to tile it in is never going to be successful anyway. So it's sort of an on-site. That's what I say, that having Carl and them come out, you can evaluate, look and have a discussion about the thing, so you know, well, yes, that's a good option. There might be some tussocks and flax and that in it, but I mean, the water quality, it's going to make better water quality or easier farming for me, and allows me to put more resources into looking after the easy. You do the easy ones, the hard gullies are going to be, you can fence off, or like I say, those ones that are 10 metres wide, you'll end up putting three or four lots of an overflow up and trying to get them drained anyway, and you've always got maintenance with them. So it's horses for courses. Like, there's not, it's not just one, say, well, if it's got so many litres of water going out of it, or it's so long, that needs to stay. But, you know, that's what my thing is, that it's an on-site evaluation.
Now, we've noticed, or I've noticed anyway, some farmers using as a winter grazing option are just grazing pasture, particularly sheep, and they have have the sheep in a pasture for 3 or 4 days and then move them on, and that seems to reduce the amount of soil that's exposed in the winter situation. Is that a viable option, or do you always have to have some sort of winter grazing, or what are the limitations of using that system?
Of daily shift system versus 2 day or 3 day?
Well, versus having a sweet crop or something like that.
Well, I don't want a sheep on crop anyway. I want them, they're all grass winter. Okay. So I try to do 2 day shifts with them, and we'll fence off. Like, I have a lot of those golden tussocks in that around, so they're good shelter at lambing time. So I put an electric fence around the creeks and around them to keep them growing, is the plan with it. So it's only cattle that I put on Swedes, and it's I don't really enjoy it that much when it's pouring with rain and you can hear them standing out there, but it's sort of part of we need that balance in our farming systems, to have cattle as well as sheep to even up the grass, you know, eat the grass when it's growing in the summertime and springtime. So, the daily shifting thing of the wee blocks of just about need a 100-way dog to get them all on, I think most people have moved on from that, in that it's a whole lot easier on the sheep, not being in such close contact and not doing the same pugging to the paddocks as what it used to do. But having said that, when strip grazing first came out, it was the best tool we ever had because we had mossy, horrible south sides of hills, and we intensively grazed them, and we got the ryegrass and clover to grow on them. So it pushed the sheep onto those harder to get to grow bits of ground. So it sort of has a place for it all the way through.
All right, thanks very much.
Yes, good morning. You were talking in your submission about the last bite. It's regarding, I'll just find that, 3 metre grass buffer that you're suggesting around flowing waterways in a 20 metre last bite strip around waterways. This you're referring to grazing down, are you?
Yeah, when, like, with cattle and that wintering and taking it down towards the waterway and leaving it. Sometimes it's better weather at the last, you're not going to get quite the same storm that you get during it.
So you're not doing that with sheep on all grass?
No.
Don't need to?
No, we're not. Like, we try not to, because their pastures have improved to the stage they're at, we try not to hug them anyway because, well, it's a waste. You don't see the grass, you see California thistles in the springtime. That's what you see in no grass, so there's no point in doing it.
And in terms of the feed pads or wintering pads, you're suggesting there should be no limit. The more you've got, the less impact there.
Well, I don't. In our situation, we're probably only going to have 100 or 150 cattle or something in any one place anyway. 100 would be a lot. So it's not like we're going to have thousands of them. I have an old bull shed, covered yards that I have about 60 cattle in it, and we put an overflow down through, drains down through it, and fill it up with bark chips. And at the end of it, we've got the pipes coming up the bottom, and they're all hooked in and they go into a trough. And then we've got a submersible pump, and it just pumps it into a tank, holding tank, which is all very good. But now I need a consent now to disperse that back out again. And I mean, I've put it out, taken it out in the spray tank and sprayed it around the paddocks, thinking that I'm going to have four leaf clovers and everything else growing, and it doesn't seem to make any difference, which is really disappointing if I don't put it on thick enough. But it's, you know, for an operation like that, again, if the sustainability team could come in and have a look and say, well, that's, you've got that under control, you need to put that, you can discharge that out onto these paddocks here on the weather, when the weather's normal, it's not raining or something like that. It's just a you know, common sense sort of thing. They tell us, we tell them, and they say, let us know when you're doing it. And there's no need for consultants, because we looked at, about 3 or 4 years ago, converting this farm to a dairy farm. And, you need to get a consultant out to tell you about it. Well, she turned up and sat there for a quarter of an hour, and then it was $1,000 for me being here sort of thing. And, you know, we spent probably $25,000 on consultants and didn't go ahead with it, which was probably quite a good thing. But, there's a cost that we're not seeing anything for in our sheep farming practices, especially in that region. Because I can remember when Dad would have 100 calves in a 2-acre paddock right by the creek, and we'd skid in and feed 50 bales of, throw it in the hay rack for them and skid back out again. They wintered, that's how they wintered. Well, it was interesting because just down below that was freshwater mussels, and they kept growing in that creek. You would have thought they would have been dead for all money, but you know, so he didn't need a consent to do that. It filled up the creek. He had to get the digger in to clean the creek out every year because he was putting half his paddock in the creek. But at the time, it wasn't causing a big environmental, like, it wasn't damaging the quality of the water, obviously, because the freshwater mussels were growing stuff. So that's what I'm saying. To have just on site, yes, no, or yes, this is what we'll have a discussion on site, is saving sheep, you know, saving us money as opposed to paying a consultant. We'll be sitting in town, he'll drive out from town, charge him whatever he feels like to get there, and charge whatever he feels like when he's there. So that's my biggest gripe, but anyway.
I'll describe. Thank you.
Good question.
Yeah, have you got a reticulated water scheme out to your stock?
I'm getting one, I'm making one, yeah, creating one.
Yeah, I'm a little interested in how you calculate you're going to need 80,000 litres of water per day.
80,000, well.
Well, you say that the permitted level's about half what you require.
Yeah.
How much stock are you running on your operation?
We've got about 5,000.
Stock units?
Yeah. Well, I'll have to admit that some of the start of that was beef and lambs, some of their figures, and they may not have been quite right in those, what's there. But, well, why, I don't know what, how much water I will need. It depends how many creeks I fence off, I suppose, as to how much we're going to need. But it's just my water system comes from the up in the bush. It's a spring that we've always drunk the water out of, and that's all we've just tapped into it,
right,
and upgraded it. So it's a gravity fed system that's working away there. And it comes, it's just going through two tanks, through a wee tank and into a big tank up on the hill, and then it just gravity feeds down, and then the overflow just carries on down the creek. When I don't need it, it doesn't need it, but I have to go up there and after we've had a flood or something, this decent lot of rain, and clean it out because of all the stuff that comes out of the bush, which is an interesting, another interesting story that goes.
So it is your plan to have reticulated water to the paddock?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're working on it, but it's $500 a trough to get it in there. It costs a bit to do, plus the hoses.
I'd be very interested to hear it sometime in the future if your stock do manage to drink that amount, because I would have assumed that there wasn't, that was adequate for stock.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine they would drink. Yeah. Would drink.
You just make a point there.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Just kidding.
Thank you.
Okay. Or anything else? Yes. Just you make mention that in the feed pad rule 35, you said that you can have as many pads as you like, but the total number of cattle being 100. Which is, I think, the expectation is that multiple pads, or at the moment it's one pad per farm, but a number have suggested that we should be able to have, well, they should be able to have multiple pads, as long as they didn't go over 100, that didn't trigger a consent. You want to comment any further on that?
Well, I think it probably is a good figure to work on, 100, because the more you put in, the bigger the problem becomes, isn't it? So if you've got a figure of 100 or 99, whatever you want to call it, it allows you to work to that. It still needs to be, whether it's 100 or 101, whatever the rule is, and you need a consent for 101, it's always going to annoy somebody, isn't it, no matter where. But it needs the same thing. It needs to be the sustainability. People need to know that, check it and make sure that you are playing by the rules, that you're not... Yeah, you've got 99 on there, but all the stuff's just flowing out wherever it wants to, or doing whatever it wants to anyway. But you need to think it, so I don't, to control it. So I don't, I think it's a horses for courses thing, but I think there's no point in saying you can, if you've got 200 cattle, put more than one heap. It does cause more problems, 200 cattle in a heap than 100 cattle in a heap, doesn't it? So if something does go wrong, got less thing. But I know with having Carl and them come out and look at, they've done a farm plan up for me and of all the creeks we need fenced off, and we come out and discuss this. I have a silage stack that I've set that I feed to, and I put in the wagon and feed to the cattle in the shed, and for some reason it was leaking. The water was, I think the surface water was going around and just sitting in the front of it, and then it was carrying on out into the paddock, and you could see where it was going down the paddock. What can I do about it? So I put some big bales of hay on where it was to sort of filter it, and put two or three lots of them down. Carl came and had a look at it, and we decided that was the best option, because the silage was there. We couldn't do anything about it to stop it doing it, so we mitigated as much as we could so that it wasn't getting to the creek. And now we've got it fed out, and you can see it's a surface water problem. They thought it must have been a spring under the silage deck that was causing the problem, but it wasn't. It's obviously surface water that's coming down there. So we can get now, because he came out, he looked, saw what we were doing, he wrote a letter to cover it, said, I've seen it, we've mitigated it. I've wrote a letter. If anyone does say anything, we can go back and say, yes, that is controlled as good as we can at the time. So, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you very much. I've no further questions, but thanks very much for coming in and providing all that useful information to us.